In a culture obsessed with happiness hacks and quick fixes, Kiran Sethia offers something radically different: permission to acknowledge that life is genuinely difficult. Drawing from both personal experience and philosophical wisdom, he challenges the notion that suffering is merely an obstacle to happiness rather than an inevitable part of the human condition. When Sethia was struck with chronic pain at age 27, doctors eventually advised him to ignore the pain if possible, a dismissal that mirrors our collective approach to suffering. Meanwhile, his family faced a cascade of medical crises: cancer, surgery, Alzheimer's. These weren't extraordinary circumstances, but rather emblematic of what it means to be human. Pain and disability transform our relationship with time itself. Chronic suffering erases the memory of comfort and prevents us from imagining relief, what Emily Dickinson called an infinite contain, trapping us between a forgotten past and an unimaginable future. Yet disability theorists have revolutionized our understanding of physical limitation, shifting the conversation from medicine to civil rights. The traditional view assumes physical limitations necessarily make life worse, but research reveals a fascinating paradox. People with disabilities don't generally rate their well-being significantly lower than others. This challenges Aristotle's impossible standard that the good life must be lacking in nothing. All lives are inherently selective and limited. No one engages with everything valuable. Consider Bill Veeck, who lost his right foot in World War II, yet thrived as a baseball executive who integrated the American League. Or Harriet McBride Johnson, born with muscular dystrophy, who became a successful lawyer and disability activist. The wisdom lies not in denying suffering, but in approaching it differently. Rather than fixating on future pain, we can focus on the present moment, treating persistent suffering as isolated episodes to diminish its power. Loneliness is as lethal as smoking 15 cigarettes daily. With our brains processing social rejection like physical pain, reflecting our deep need for connection. While ancient friendships were primarily practical arrangements, modern bonds offer genuine emotional connection rather than mere survival. Market economies transformed friendship from necessity to choice, challenging Aristotle's view that true friendship requires virtue. Supporting struggling friends matters because of our connection, not their merit. True friendship means being valued for who you are, not achievements, reflecting Kant's distinction between price, replaceable value, and dignity, irreplaceable worth. Alleviating loneliness comes from focusing on others rather than pursuing connection directly. Brief positive interactions with strangers boost happiness, while listening builds lasting relationships. Building friendships requires courage to risk rejection and dedication to maintain bonds through structured activities like volunteer work, classes, and sports. Grief isn't a single emotion, but a constellation of feelings: objectless anger, causeless guilt, and more. Like scar tissue forming after injury, it's an active process. The Stoics viewed grief as harmful, with Epictetus advocating preparation for loss through constant awareness of impermanence. While Stoics suggest aligning with unchangeable reality, this approach risks diminishing authentic emotional connections. Grief presents a paradox. Though death is permanent, our grief naturally diminishing, not because reasons for grief change, but because grief evolves independently of reasoning, much like love. This explains the importance of mourning rituals, which provide structure when reason cannot. As Western culture has shifted from communal ritual to medical management of death, we must create our own frameworks for mourning. Grief offers no final resolution. It's a map for navigating uncertain territory. Baseball history showcases famous failures like Merkel's boner and Bill Buckner's error. As poet James Richardson notes, if we recalled all our unfulfilled intentions, regret would overwhelm us. While many view life as an autobiographical narrative, some, like philosopher Galen Strawson, Iris Murdoch, and Montaigne, thrive without this perspective. Sethia contrasts telic activities, goal-oriented tasks like building, with atelic ones, ongoing processes like walking, that have no endpoint. telic activities place satisfaction in future completion, while atelic ones exist in the present moment. Living well means embracing process over outcome. Groundhog Day demonstrates this through Phil Condors' journey to value process over success. The concept of failure emerged in 1800s America as entrepreneurial success became tied to personal worth, a mindset championed by Emerson and Douglas that contributes to today's deaths of despair. Doomscrolling reflects our compulsion to consume devastating news about inequality and disaster, leaving us feeling helpless. This raises the question, why pursue justice when solidarity brings pain? Setia argues that morality and self-interest align. True human flourishing requires feeling what there is reason to feel, including empathy for others. Simone Veil exemplified radical solidarity, giving away her salary and refusing heat when others lacked it. Though called the Martian, she founded a workers' school, joined strikes, and wrote powerfully about oppression. Structural injustice emerges from systemic interactions rather than individual prejudice. While we aren't directly culpable for systems like educational inequality, we're implicated through our actions and benefits, creating obligations to work for change. Climate change exemplifies this. Warming disproportionately affects regions that contributed least, while responsible nations face fewer consequences. Joining campaigns for institutional change offers one path to address structural injustice collectively. Against the cosmic scale, billions of galaxies, eons of time, human existence seems insignificant. Yet we find deep meaning in our daily lives, creating what philosophers call the absurd condition of existence. Philosophers typically explore what makes individual lives meaningful through engagement in worthwhile pursuits like relationships, justice, art, or work. The threat comes from nihilism, as Tolstoy experienced when previously meaningful activities became hollow. While religion provides meaning through metaphysical frameworks, atheists must find cosmic truths to reconcile suffering without traditional structures. Contemplating human extinction reveals how meaning connects to humanity's future. Though extinction would warrant sorrow, humanity remains lovable despite its flaws. It shouldn't negate present meaning. A sunset's beauty exists independent of future observers. Our meaning stems from gradual progress toward justice in this world, not redemption in another. Hope combines desire and belief, wanting something while seeing it as possible, not certain. We don't hope for what's impossible, guaranteed, or unwanted. Hope acknowledges limited control while maintaining possibility. True hope requires emotional investment, what Kierkegaard called a passion for what is possible. The possibility must be tangible enough to plan for, even against long odds, like pursuing a challenging career change. Despair emerges when possibility dies. Good hoping balances between excessive optimism and hopelessness. Drawing from Thomas Aquinas and Aristotle, hoping well means maintaining realistic assessment while preserving potential for action. Rebecca Solnit demonstrates this through documented changes, from ending apartheid to legalizing same-sex marriage. The virtue of hoping well combines truthful belief with moral courage to envision and act on alternatives. We should find possibility within our actual lives, not idealized versions. While life's hardships can't be solved through positive thinking alone, these challenges offer opportunities for deeper meaning, not despite difficulties, but sometimes because of them.